Tonight is a treat, and I can tell that many of you maybe have heard about Karen. I heard her, I think it was 5 years ago, and it was quite profound. And what she had been through was quite just so life-changing. Since then, she has had more because of the damage that was done by the chemicals in her first accident, and caused her near-death experience. Then it resulted eventually in more surgeries. So let me just read to you. She says, in 1994, she had a chemical accident, burning both her lungs, which initially caused her death, leaving her with only 11% capacity in each of her lungs after that. She was given a short time to live, but she fought very hard to stay here, desperately trying to keep a promise to the guardian on the other side, and you'll hear, I'm sure, about that guardian. Many other deaths would happen over the next 10 years. So she is one of the people who's had multiple near-death experiences. So will Karen come? She is. Yeah. Will you welcome her warmly? Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm a ball bag. In 1994, I was working in a dry cleaners. I'm not going to go through the whole story because I have died 8 times. I'd like to explain the times that are the most valuable to me. And they seem to be to you as well. As we started this journey, it was something that I didn't anticipate, that I didn't expect, and it changed my life immediately. First of all, I didn't believe in the afterlife. I believed in God, but I couldn't find my own personal truth. I prayed a lot, but I was also a redneck. If you know anything about rednecks, I was praying a lot. I was a trucker, owner, operator for quite a while. Pulled a 45-102 flatbed, shake and bake from Benicia, California to Lovelock, Nevada. That's a little bit of nitro and sulfur and ammonia oxide. And the dry cleaners punched my lights out. But you've heard that old saying, you can make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. Well, you're looking at a sow's ear and a silk purse. When I died, I inhaled carbon tetrachloride and perchloroethylene along with extreme hot water. I remember screaming pretty loud, leastwise I thought I did in my head, for Jesus to please make it stop. And he did. I remember touching the front of my chest and thinking, whew, man, that was close. God bless me, man, that was close. And I could feel my body, leastwise I thought it was my body. I opened up my eyes and it was black all around me. There wasn't no top, there wasn't no bottom, there wasn't no sides, there wasn't no light, there wasn't no sink. But there was something several feet below me, curled up, that looked nasty and stinking. And it was me. I had blood coming out my mouth, and I was defecating and urinating on myself. And I don't know about you, but mine, I didn't want to be there. Sooner I can get out of here, better off I'm going to be. I just started leaving. I love flying. And I didn't talk about it years ago when Bill first invited me here, because I was afraid to talk about it. But in that void, there was a lot of negative stuff that I just didn't want to be around. And it scared me a great deal. And I thought I'd prayed, but man, let me tell you, I was really getting down to the gritty stuff of it. And I felt that light. And when I turned over to my side, I saw a beautiful light that was very bright. And I couldn't tell if I was moving toward it or it was moving toward me, but we were cooking. And all of a sudden, the void was gone. And moving through that universe, there was a great deal of anticipation, excitement, and joy. And I'm just going to kind of jump ahead a little bit. When I came into the garden, there was people standing around in white robes that looked like they'd been hit with mud pies. And I thought to myself, dang, man, they went through hell down there. Look what they're getting rid of. And as they would talk, those gray spots would kind of disappear. And I knew that they were going through what I would call a healing. And they were just in little groups of people. I thought, man, I'm one thirsty duck. I need me some water. And so I walked over by the water's edge there. And it looked just like mercury. And it was just so clear. As like you could put your finger in it and touch the bottom. And about that time is when I noticed the guardian standing at the other side of the bridge. And I said, hey, you. Yeah, you. Did I die? Because if I did, I ain't going back, okay? Can I have me a drink of this water? I need me a drink real bad. And he just smiled. He was as beautiful as any woman you'd ever see. And as masculine as any man. And he was just really tall. I don't remember walking across that bridge, but I was standing next to him. And everything that was passed between he and I was telepathic. And I said, you know, I don't think I'm where I'm supposed to be. And he says, really? Where would you like to be? Oh, I reckon I'd just like to be around my mom. Because she had just passed away in May. And this was in September. Well, let's see what we can do about that. And we started walking down this road that was real sparkly, like red dirt with that phony gold stuff in it, you know. I don't think it was phony there, though. And all of a sudden we walked up and there's this big old emerald green rock about the size of a Volkswagen. And I walked up to it and he just kind of rubbed his hand over it like. And next thing I knew, I was inside of the dadgum thing. And I heard Mama say, Johnny, honey, you better sit down. I got something to tell you. Oh, don't tell me that the toilet's clogged up again, Opal. No, honey, we're going to have a baby. And I realized that I was with my earth mother at that point. And it was like I was watching about 30 TVs all at one time. And I saw this little old towhead redhead grow up to be one pain in the butt. And I saw things from many different perspectives from different people that had hurt me in my life. And I figured out why they did it. Because they had been harmed as well. And there was forgiveness given there. And I saw why Mom and Dad got a divorce, because when I was born, there was two of us, and I didn't know that. I just thought it was me, and I got a chance to meet Pamela Diane. We looked quite a lot alike. She just didn't have that redneck business going on. So I started having a deeper understanding as to what had went on within the family. And she went on, and next thing I knew, I was outside that rock, and we started walking toward the city. The city was quite beautiful. It glowed like there was a bunch of different lights with inside of each block that created this absolutely stunning building. We just glided up the stairs. There wasn't no walls, just big old pillars. To this day, I still call it the North Building. And I put my hand up there and I went, wow, I understand that. How about that? Totonga he chikarwa. So chardan me we live tutkaria. All these different languages. Now I gotta let you know, I didn't graduate from junior high school. I got married at a very young age. Young and dumb, 16. Never graduated. Never learned Spanish, much less Italian or French or any of those other things. But I could sure as heck understand it. Well, We continued to move through the hallway, and we walked into this one room. I call it the third room. And in that room, there were many devastations that I saw. And I was very moved by it. And I asked him, I said, please, can I not have to look at this? Will you take it from my eyes? And he said, no, there's things that need to be covered and seen. There's things that you need to take care of. And I saw buildings and people perishing. I saw an island completely wiped away with hundreds and thousands of people gone in an instant. I saw elephants run into a big old hill, long ways away from people. I saw stubs coming up out of the ocean water. There was nothing left. Everyone was gone. I said, please, I don't want to look at this no more. I want to leave, okay? And there was a lot more that was seen there, and I did leave that room with him. We went into another one, and it was gorgeous. There was stairs with water coming down the very middle. And when you looked up to the top, you could feel God looking at you everywhere. You couldn't see a body or face or nothing, but you knew he was there. And all of a sudden, I heard a voice. She ain't ready. She's just not ready yet. And I turned around. I said, yes, I am. I got the keys. Benevolence, gratitude, thankfulness, forgiveness. And I started rattling off all these words. Shh. I thought, that sounded like mama. And I was looking at all of the heads that was in that room, but I couldn't see no faces. And he kind of gave me that, come on, we're going to go. And I didn't want to because I knew I had the keys. And I wanted to make myself clear. Well, we left the room. So much for making yourself clear. We walked out that side. And the next thing I knew, we were going back down this path. And I said, I want to get me some of them flowers, okay? And I reached down and I plucked them up. Before I'd even straightened up, flowers came right back. And I looked down there and I looked at that group of flowers in my hand. And he said, don't you realize there's no such thing as death? Yeah, I'm getting the idea. I said, this is cool. And you could literally see life in those flowers. And honey, there was colors there. And I have not seen them colors since I've been over there. And I mean, I've looked. I've been in more horticulture areas than you could shake a freckle at, okay? And I can't find them flowers. And I've described them until I can't see straight. Well, they don't exist. Yes, they do. Well, I got to go to Hawaii a few years ago with the kids. And I found a couple of them flowers. But they wasn't big like this. They was little tiny things like that growing everywhere. And I thought, well, okay, at least I saw some similar. And so, you know, we was walking back. And I realized my feet was in the water. And I looked down and my mind's eye, I thought, well, there was only one I knew could do this kind of stuff. And he said, here you are as one with one. To be as one in all ways. Remember that in all ways. And I just looked at those feet, that far underneath deep water. My knees wasn't wet, neither was his. And we made it to the other side. Next thing I knew, it was like there was a whirlwind sucking and blowing all at the same time. Sounded like a dadgum train roaring through my head. And I woke up on the cement floor with blood in my mouth. And I was on fire inside. I hurt so bad I couldn't see straight. And I opened up my eyes and I looked around like, sweet Jesus, I'm here. Cramp. And then I'm going, ooh, what is that stench? And I'm looking and it's me. And I'm hurting and I wasn't feeling so good. And I crawled out of that daggum laundry room. And I wasn't the same after that. I tried to explain to my daughter that I went somewhere. And I was really upset with him because I didn't want to be here. I wanted to be there. I really was stuck in a mess for quite a while. And the problem with all of it was I knew I was different, but no one else knew it. I started seeing people that no one else saw and talking to people that no one else could hear and tasting things that no one else could taste or smell. And it took me about 3 years to find out that I had become a sensitive, empathic, clairvoyant, physical medium. Boy, that's a mouthful. You should try living with it. It sucks. I was told that I had burned both my lungs severely and that there was nothing they could do. They gave me a puffy Atrovent and they sent me home to die. I didn't have no insurance. I had a Discover credit card and I used that sucker and I pulled money off of it because I tried working 3 different days and I couldn't do it. I was breathing similar to that. And I said, boy, do you think I could get a little bit of oxygen? Well, you know, you're only 41, so we can't help you. You're not old enough. Okay. You got some insurance? No. I got a credit card. Well, they had given me 5 to 6 weeks to live. Good. Now we're talking. Let's just get this over with. And so I sat back, and 8 weeks later, I had to find me another doctor, because I was still here. And that's what went on for the next couple of years. I exacerbated, and they gave me some paddles. Come back. Oh, yeah, I'm good for another little while. By this time, I was lucky and got to get some welfare. And that was fun, because by this time, I had become homeless and was living in my Aries K car. I got me an oxygen tank because I was having such a hard time breathing. My trunk looked like an oxygen row, you know, had about 10 or 12 cylinders in it. I was staying down at the woman's shelter down there, and I was staying in my car because I didn't really like being around all these different folks, especially the ones that no one else could see. Because when they talk to you, you got to talk back or they drive you nuts. Okay? So this particular evening, I heard this lady knock on my window. And I looked over at her and she had some pretty eyes. And she was an older woman, real dirty fingernails. And I thought, bless her heart, she needs to get in here out of the cold. So I opened up the door and I said, come on in, grab a quilt. So we started talking. And of course, I'm sitting there, psst, 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 with my oxygen. She says, why aren't you doing the work? I said, I beg your pardon, but do you see my beauty here, my beauty mark? I was being a smart butt. She just ignored it, and she says, why aren't you doing the work? You promised him that you'd do the work. Promised who? The guardian. What are you talking about? She went right on, just like she knew everything. And I thought, oh, man, I am hallucinating big time. I got to get me some take-it-easy pills or something because I'm losing it big time. And she just kept right on talking. Well, I had made a promise before I come back and woke up on that floor. It said, if you could change anything, would you? And I mentioned my son and my daughter. Is there anything else? Oh, yeah, I'd help people. I'd help people whenever I could, however I could, for whatever reason, as long as it was for the good of mankind and for God's sake. Whoosh. That's when I got sucked up by the vacuum and got brought back here. So here she knew about that dadgum promise. And I couldn't figure out how she knew. Well, I fell asleep talking to her, and when I woke up, the quilt was folded on the dadgum chair there, and she was gone. And I got to thinking pretty heavy after that, that I knew I had to do something, I just didn't know what. But I needed to get my butt in gear. And if I was going to die, that was okay, but I better get back to living, because it sounded like I had a job to do. I just didn't know what it was. But I figured if God wanted me to do it, He'd see to it that I did it. That's the understatement. Next 3 years, I exacerbated twice, had the jumping paddles a couple of times, little bit of CPR. I hate them doggone jolly sticks. They leave little funny red marks all over your boobies. That don't feel so good either. And of course then, you know, you're wanting to go. You're wanting to go back home, and you can't. So I got tired of being angry, and after about 3 or 4 years, I started really starting to get to living, and by that time I'd already started seeing people. And they just started coming. I don't know how they came, but they just started coming. It started getting worse. I had started putting a book together called An Awakening. I thought, well, I needed to try to put this story together because people need to know about God. And this has nothing to do with religion, but it sure has a lot to do with who you are and what makes your clock tick. It doesn't matter what you say or what you did. It's what you do and how you feel. Okay? It's what you want to do for someone and you don't have the chance. That's what means a great deal. It's when you love somebody so doggone much, no matter how many times you say, I love you, it ain't enough. It goes deeper than that. This is what he taught me in a short period of time. And I started enjoying living again. And all of a sudden I felt really heavy, and I thought, man, this is a different feeling. And I'd been working really hard because I'd been working 3.5 years on getting this book done. And it was done. It was finally finished. And now I couldn't believe I'd actually written a book. And they put me above Sylvia Brown. I felt like I had big time now. 5 shelves above, you know. And man, them doggone books was going off the shelves that daggone fast by me, my head spin. And all of a sudden, I got a real deep pain in my left side and just curled up my toes, you know. And I thought, oh, this isn't so good. And I said, Danny, I think you better take me home. He had a little bit of trouble getting me out to the car. And it was snowing like a bugger. And I tried crawling up in that dadgum thing, and I didn't have the strength. I just didn't. All of a sudden, it was like I was just sucked dry. Danny finally got me home and into the house, and I made it into my rocker, and I couldn't move anymore. And I called my daughter up, and I said, Kimmy, I said, no. Something's not right. Something's going on with me, honey. Would you take me to the hospital? She said, Mom, I'll be right over. So we went to the emergency, and they took x-rays. And they said, well, you're going to have to come back in the morning. This doesn't look very good. And they'd set up a special x-ray for me to have that following morning. We came back, and a girlfriend had went with us. And we walked in there. Well, they walked and I rolled. And I looked up at the x-ray machine and it was totally black. And I said, oh, it collapsed. And the technician put his hand on my shoulder and he said, I'm so sorry. And my daughter and Shelley just stared at it. I had one little spot about that big in the right lung, and that was it. The other one was jet black. My left lung had collapsed completely. And I said, well, looks like we're going to get the show on the road. And Kim said, Mom, don't look so damn happy. And I said, honey, I'm sorry, but I don't want you to worry about this. Everything's going to be all right. I said, we're going to do just fine. And I had been on a particular case with a lady because her husband had died in a mysterious manner. And I'd connected with him and talked to him and found out that his partner had killed him. He'd shot him with some kind of serum stuff that makes the heart stop beating. She's just a sweetheart. She was just a very nice lady. And she came over one evening and she says, Karen, she says, I've been in California and I need to talk to you and your brother. Is Tony there? And I said, well, yeah, he's here. Well, make sure that he is because we need some signatures. And I said, on what? Because I don't do nothing that I got to require signatures from y'all. Well, she says, I'll tell you when I get there. She wrote a check for $259,000 so I could have a lung transplant. Because I helped her understand how her husband had passed away. And this was over a period of about 5 months, 6 months, I guess. And by that time, my health was failing pretty bad. So I took it up to the University of Utah. Talked with Dr. Barbara Cahill. And I handed her the papers and I said, well, I guess I'd just like to know if I'm up for a lung transplant. And she looked at that paper like I was nuttier than a fruit bag. She kicked it off like it didn't mean anything. Well, she says, we're going to have to run you through some tests. And they did. And over the next few months, it was pretty grueling and it was pretty rough. And I guess I passed with flying colors because I was dying. And one night, the beeper went off. We took off to the hospital. And they fired me up with the shots and everything. Got me in front of the surgical doors. That was the end of it. Everybody turned around. The donor had exacerbated and I couldn't use the lung. And my daughter was a mess and so was Lucy. And I comforted both of the kids and I said, come on, no hill for a climber. This ain't nothing. We're going to do just fine. Let's go home. God's got his plan, not to worry. And we went home. And 3 weeks later, my daughter was taking me up to the hospital to have some more testings done. And I reached up and wiped and I realized I was crying. The dam broke. That was it. The minute I felt them tears, it just like the dam broke. I couldn't stop crying. The dry run had really left me in a pretty rough state. And I just went to pieces. They rolled me back in the back and they gave me some, as I call it, whoopee shots. Make you feel real good. And you're not sad. And life is good. I went home and I crawled up in my bed and I said, Lord, you know what? I am really getting tired of this. Can I just go to sleep and not wake up? I'd done all I could do. I fell asleep. A stupid phone started ringing and I grabbed it. And at any rate, I said, Karen, you got to hurry up and get to the hospital. We think we've got a lung. And so I took off and called my daughter and went in, and a few hours later, I'm sitting there waiting to go inside the surgery room, and we're taking pictures, and we're laughing, and I asked the doctor to jump up there in the bed with me. I said, you know, it's not every day you get a good-looking man to jump in bed with you and get a picture of it to boot. And so we were just acting up, you know, and being silly, and went back into the surgery room, got up on the table, and put this arm out, and this went up over my head, and they said, count from 100, and I went 99. And I remember hearing that soft music, and I thought, boy, that'd put an elephant to sleep. And then all of a sudden I heard someone say, hey, Charles, why don't you put the boss on? What? Dun, 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 dun. And I'm going, what the heck? And I start looking around, and I look down. Dr. Stringham. Whoa. Hey, buddy. And I'm going, whoa, look what's going on there. And I saw them cutting under the breast and under the ribs and all the way up to the back. And I'm going, holy crud ball, that's me. Whoa. And so I just sat down and I started watching because I always wanted to be a nurse. And this was so cool. I mean, man, they were shoving things down into her and hooking her up on the life support. Then they start clipping the heart away from the lung, and they plop that sucker out of there and over into a big old ball. And I'm going, man, that looks ugly. That looks downright ugly. And he's got this girth in his hand, and he says, just look at that. That is a beautiful specimen, and we don't even have to measure it. Right into the hole. And I'm going, man. And there's these big old metal hands holding me back, and the hole was about this big. And I'm going, that is so amazing. And he's swabbing the inside of the chest hole. And he says, I want this going to the lab. Later, I found out from the pathologist, they had swabbed the inside of my chest wall, and there was carbon tetrachloride and perchloroethylene exposure on the inside wall of my chest. And then I heard someone say, Karen, come on, let's go. It's time to go now. No, I don't want to go. I said, I'm watching them do this. Karen, it's time to go. And I went. All of a sudden, I wasn't in the surgery room any longer. And I was in the void, and I heard a bunch of whispering going on, and I said, Rahil, do I have to stay in here? No, Karen, we're going to go through this. And she held my hand, and we went through it. And then we started walking into that garden, and this kid come up to me, Dudette, I'm going to tell you now, I don't even like being in your body, man. It sucks, okay? You are an old broad, and this is not what I was after. Who are you? My name's Craig, Dudette. You got my lung in there. Karen, it's okay. You just talk to him. Dudette, man, you are too old for me. I am 16. You are like 53, hello. And I said, well, honey, what was you doing? I was in my BMX race. Dudette, we got into a bottleneck. And all of a sudden, this blonde-headed lady's right in my face. And I'm going, oh, my God. Don't you die on me, Craigie. Don't you die, do you hear me? And she's right in my face. And I open up my eyes, and I'm laying in the hospital bed. And I'm looking around, and I got this thing shoved in my mouth. And the doctor says, don't try to talk. You're on life support. You're doing just fine. No, I'm not. Because the kid's standing at the side of him going, you suck! You suck, lady! And I'm going, oh, God. I suck. And I says, this is not good in my mind. This is not good. Well, I was on life support for the first lung for 39 hours. So clinically, I was dead. When I came out of it, I was on my own. They didn't have to jump start nothing. Not that time. And my new life started. He rejected me from day one. He did not want to be in my body. And my body was quite happy that he was in there. And although my body was rejecting the lung, my God, I was full of life. I mean, I had a lung that big, and I had been breathing with that much space. And so all of a sudden, I didn't need oxygen. I could make it on my own, and it was like, this was great. I was really alive, and I just couldn't believe it. And anyways, boy, I thought, okay, now I can get this book finished, and I can get it back on the market, and I can start doing people again. You know, I can start sitting with folks and finding kids, and I'm going to stop the murders. That's too nasty. Because I had realized in working with the FBI that I had become a victim and the perpetrator all in one. And it sucks, to use the terminology. It hurts. My body bruises from things that will happen to others. I taste you. I smell you. I feel you. I hear them. Welcome to my world. God, life is good. Very good. And so I proceeded to try to move forward in what was left of my life. In the process, my rejection was continuous. I did a large lecture for some folks, and I had, the needle thing in my arm, and I was wearing long sleeves because I didn't want to frighten the people. I was sitting for about 125 people. It was what we called predictions at the time, and I was preparing to tell them, well, you better get set. We're going to have a black president. And this gentleman was sitting in the front, and he says, oh, BS. I no more believe that than the man on the moon. And I said, I don't either, but we're going to have one. And I said, you know, you got quite a bit of money. Really? And I said, yes, sir. And I said, I'd like you to pull it out, because if you don't, you're going to lose it. Oh, that's a bunch of hogwash. He lost $255,000 when the market crashed. Oh, well. You know, what can I say? In the meantime, I continued to go into a deeper rejection. It wasn't so very good, because now I started feeling very similar to what I had felt with the other lung. And there was a great deal of pain that I felt this particular day. I said, Kimmy, I think you better take me to the hospital, honey. What's the matter, Mom? And I said, I think my lung has failed. And she says, the new one? And I said, no, the old one. So we went off to the hospital, had another test, and sure enough, it had failed. It had collapsed, and I was in full rejection. My kids were really a mess. My friends were a mess, and I was happy because I thought, finally I'm going to go home. I don't have to fight with this no more. Struggling to breathe out of a straw is the pits. And I had made it so far, 10 years, with breathing through a straw. And I was ready to hand it over, and it was okay. And I wasn't angry with God, and I wasn't angry with life. I feel that I'd had a good run at it. I mean, my God, I didn't even graduate from high school, and I wrote a book. And you could read it. there was a few typos, but hey, you could still read it. I was so proud. And I said, God, I just wanted to leave your story behind and let people know how real you are. The joy of you and our purpose and, oh, God, you get me wound up. I'm like a 10-day clock. And I said, that's why you picked me, because I got a big mouth. And I was in my bed and Melody was taking care of me. I'd lost control of my bladder and was wearing diapers, and I'd lost down to 98 pounds, and all the souls were around me. They were just waiting for me to die, because I could see all gray ones walking around my bed, mumbling and talking. I'm going, can't you wait until I take the breath? Get out of here and leave me alone. And Mel says, what's the matter, Karen? I said, they're all standing around waiting. I said, it's like a cat in a dog kennel. And so she stands up and she says, you want me to tell them to leave? I said, would you please? So she's standing there looking at my closet doors. Will you just leave her alone? You know, she says, doggone it. She's tired. You got to leave her alone. And got real quiet. And all of a sudden I got this brainstorm. And I looked at Mel and I said, you know, Mel, I talked to Kimmy. I said, I want to tell you, she's going to come over and take care of me. So why don't you go home? Oh, honey, now you don't need to be alone. Oh, I'm not going to be alone. I said, shoot for it. She's going to be here. Then you're going to be here. And then I'm going to be up. And why don't you just go ahead and go home and be with your hubby? And I said, then Kimmy will be here pretty soon. And then you can come back tomorrow. Are you sure? Yeah. Yeah, it'll be fine. So she left. And I dropped the oxygen on the floor. And I said, okay, let's get her done, son. Come on, I want to go home. Let's get this train moving. I am done. And I rolled over and I closed my eyes. A cotton picking phone starts ringing. I can't reach the phone because I've been without oxygen for about 4.5 hours. And I'm trying to get to the phone. And it's like it's 2 miles away from me. And it's like that far away from my bed. And Rahil says, you should not have taken off the oxygen. Don't give me a sermon right now, Rahil. Rahil is my guardian angel that came back with me 20 years ago when I died the first time. I thought she was just a voice in my head. But she's much more than that. She's been with me a very long time. No, she doesn't have wings. But she has a heart bigger than you can ever imagine. And she guides me and she provides me memory of what the guardian had told me 20 years ago, 18 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, and this year, January the 8th. Was the last time I died. I had walking pneumonia, RSV, and influenza. And I didn't know that my limbs could curl. It was very painful. It took them 8.5 hours to get me stable and 30 bags of saline to get me undehydrated. My fever had made it to 106, and no one wanted to touch me with a 10-foot pole because I was a bilateral lung transplant twice. So Rahil has been with me a very long time. When the night that I was preparing to go home, God sent me another lung on this side. Her name is Christina. She was 21 and a half years old, and she was hit by a drunk driver in Vegas. She saved my life, and she still lives with me. I have DNA from both of the kids. I couldn't tell the story about my left because I was asked by the mother not to. And so my book will speak of two women. Christina was studying to be a writer, an author, and we wrote a book called Miracles Left and Right, and it will be out in February or March of 2014. And Awakening will be coming out in January, and An Angel Whispers will be following Miracles Left and Right. And then there's a couple of prayer books and Heaven's Gateway and a few others that's in the computer right now. God keeps me very busy. I'll be 64 years old Christmas Day. Some days I feel 30, and other days I feel 105. Thank God for hair dye. This is the real thing. This is phony. But this is real. God has blessed me with a life so unusual, so different. And I wondered about the angels. Well, 3 years after Christina came to me, I was working and working and working and working, and I was seeing people left and right. And I tend to fly to Colorado, and I go to Price, hello. And from Price, I jump out to California, and now we're getting ready to go to Idaho. And I said, God, if you want me to go there, give me the strength. Boom! And all of a sudden, we're gone. It just works. It just happens. It just comes together. All of a sudden, this one day, my brother and I, we grab us a cheap breakfast for $3, and we're coming out of the little restaurant, and I said, bro, why don't you do me a favor, and why don't you drive? I don't feel so good. He said, what'd you do, eat too much? And I said, yeah. Didn't you? Nah, I'm fine. And man, I'm telling you, I get in the passenger side of my tummy, you know, starting to look like a blimp. And I'm going, sweet Jesus, you got some Tums? And so I'm chewing Tums, you know, and it just keeps growing. And it's like, God bless me, I look like I'm 14 months pregnant. What is going on here, you know? Oh man, it was really rough. And so I get on my little phone there, and I'm calling my girlfriend, and I said, yo, Shelly, do you think you could take me up to the hospital? Because my brother does not do hospitals. He just does not do well. He's one of those guys that gets all, he just can't hang.
But he's a bruiser. Just ask him.
So she says, yeah, it'll take me a little while. Are you in a rush? And I said, oh, no. It's nothing heavy. I said, I just got indigestion really bad. And as the hours went by, I thought, man, this is really getting to be something. And so she showed up about 3 hours later. So I got into her little Jeep. We're heading up to the U. And we're getting closer and closer. And Rael is saying, now you have to breathe very deeply, you know. And I'm going, yep. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, okay, something is transpiring here. And I said, you know what, Shell? Maybe you better kick it up a notch. And so we start going a little faster. And we get up in front of the U. And all of a sudden I hear this lady just screaming bloody murder. I said, sweet Jesus, I hope they help this woman out. I don't know, where's she at, Shell? And Shell's not saying nothing. Man. And all of a sudden I see this security guy. And he's running like this. And he's pushing this wheelchair. And I fall in the darn thing. Like a board. It's like I'm stretched out. Man, I'm just like this. I'm having a heart attack, hello. I'm having a heart attack. Are you kidding me? Sweet Mother Mary Joseph, what's next? God bless me. And they're giving me the shot in the chest, and we're... Okay, I've had enough of this. And I got the death grip from hell on Shelly's hand. And I'm going, okay, we're going down for the count on this one. And all of a sudden, the doctors... I think we got rhythm. You think we got rhythm? You think? And I'm sitting there going, what the H is going on here? And the nurse says, I want you to just relax. We think you've had a heart attack. It's just a mild one. Really? The train I was on was moving very quickly. I'd had a heart attack. And I said, did you see those angels? What angels, Karen? They really have wings. I saw them. Did you see them? No, she says, you just broke four fingers. I didn't see anything. I didn't know such a little woman could have such a heavy grip. You hurt my hand. I'm sorry, but they did have wings. Karen, what are you talking about winged people for? Because they were here. You didn't see them? And I thought, okay, here we go again. I have flipped my noodle. I'm out to lunch and late for dinner. That's it. I've had enough. So I just shut up. And sure enough, 11 hours later, the blood test and everything come back. And I had had a heart attack. Okay, so now they put me on all kinds of medicine. 43 pills a day, four times a day. I'm a junkie. I wanted to gain a little bit of weight, but this is ridiculous. Steroids pump you up and out all over. And I walk fast, I feel like I've got a friend following me now. And before, all you could hear was chopsticks, you know? And, I mean, from a 7 to a 12, stretching it to a 14. Not good. And they said, you know, God, you have really given me a road to walk on. Thank you. I think. In between all of this, you have to be lighthearted. You know, after a few times, it's not fear anymore. It's like, well, what's next? Four, I feel like I'm golfing. And I truly feel like I am a cat with nine lives. I've died eight times. And I have visited to the other side five times. I'm going to tell you, heaven is more real than my words will ever do well with. I can't even begin to tell you how beautiful, how wonderful, stunning, marvelous it is. There is more love given when you first get there than you've ever experienced in this life, ever. You can say, I love you from now till doomsday, and it won't be a freckle of what it is there. God is so massive. He is so brilliant. He is everywhere. He's in everything that you see, touch, smell, feel. We are a finger of the hand that made us. We have creativity in us that we haven't even begun to scratch the surface of. And he picked this little big mouth redhead to talk about him. He could have done a lot better. Rael says he could have done a lot worse. Jesus is very real. When I was fortunate enough to meet him, I said, where do you reside? On the seventh plane of consciousness. On the seventh plane of consciousness. Yes. With Buddha, Yoga Gandhagira, Sister Mother Teresa, John Paul, Peter, James, Doubting Thomas, Timothy. I went on and on and on. Does this have to do with religion? He said it has to do with the way. The way resides in your heart, in your conscience, and in the keys that you hold within you. You either unlock your door and live graciously, or you create your own path. Either way, God loves you, holds you, cares for you, and will always have home for you because you are part of that consciousness. I was so blessed to be so close to such a being that gave so much for all of us. He came to prove God's reality, and he did that. But that's my opinion, and only my opinion. God's opinion of us is unmistakable. He knows what we're going to do before we do it. And he gives us the availability of healing from the old ones. The old ones are the sacred gatekeepers that lived a great long time ago, 28,000 years plus ago. And that's the best way I know how to say it. Love those bells. Reminds me of home. The first time I heard the angels sing was 20 years ago. They were singing holy, holy, holy while I was traveling home. They have a different language. It's not one that I can speak here, because I got to be honest with you, I can't remember it. And yet when Ra'il speaks to me, it goes deeper, deeper than you can imagine. It lifts you. It lightens you. And they love you. They love you because you're part of him. We sparkle, we shine. His eyes were like violet flames. Violet. Not blue, not brown. Violet. I sat in a church not long ago, and I visited a beautiful statue. My eyes lifted, and I looked at him, and when I closed my eyes, I remember those violet lights looking back at me. And I thought, God, you really do love us. How do you tell someone that's unsure if God exists that you exist? And he said, through your love. Love as I love you, and they will know that I am here. I do. There's some of you that I have seen on a personal side, and I feel blessed. Not special, blessed. There's a difference. Because we're all special in God's eyes. We are a part of his DNA from the 12 strands. Not long ago, there was a physicist that said the 13th cell in the 12th strand is what they now call the God cell. It took them 28,000 years to find that out. Let your faith be stronger than your fear. And faith is what you hold in your heart, in your mind, in the soul of you. You know, when 9/11 hit, I was sick for days. In my memoirs, I had written, I saw buildings crumbling and people dying, and I had no idea. I spoke to a young lady in a private session, and I said, honey, you work for Quest, don't you? She said, yes, I do. I said, well, I hate to tell you, but you're going to be out of work for a while. She says, why is that? I said, because you're going to lose your satellite. The satellite was on the top of the Twin Towers. The island that I saw all the people washed away, I spoke about in 95, 96, 97, and 98. It was the great tsunami, and it took 305,000 people to their death. The good side, diabetes will soon be a thing of the past, but it will take another 12 years before the finished touches on medicine will come to reality. There's some of it right now, but they're having to use cadaver cells. And unfortunately, that means they have to use steroids like I'm using for these two beautiful people that live with me. And yes, their DNA is still with me on a day-to-day basis. Took me a long time to break the habit of double bacon cheeseburgers. I never was one to like a whole lot of boom, and he liked jolt. So we crossed over. I drink coffee now. And we make it do. This young lady has blessed me with a beautiful capability of typing with two fingers rather quickly. She blesses me with the knowledge that she's very happy being home and that she has no ill will towards the drunk driver that took her life. And she doesn't mind being an old lady's body. I have a very different life now. It's taken its toll on my family. It's been really hard on boyfriends because if you don't tell them that you're a psychic, they're great. The minute they find that out, well, gotta go. So when I look at you and say, I love you, I mean it. Because Jesus looked at me and said it. He showed me how real that love is. And I have these, well, you know I'm married. Honey, that's so good. You know, because when I call you honey and sweetheart, it's because I love you. I don't care if you got my blood or not. You're like me. We come from the same thing. We got the same feelings. We got the same hopes. We got the same fears. We got the same desires. Beauty of it is we're all going to the same place. And those that don't believe in him, that's another story. That's that void. I hope this has helped you to understand. Thank you.
Looking back on it, what do you think was the reason you saw the destruction, the buildings falling and the flood? I mean, what was the purpose of that, do you think?
Well, as all things in life, they will be as they're meant to be. We're going through a great change right now, okay, worldwide. And it's time for people to wake up and smell the coffee, basically. You know, used to, we held a deep, profound respect for our fellow man. Unfortunately, there's been a big change in a lot of people's feelings, okay? And so what it's really coming down to is people paying attention to their inner souls, not their outer needs or desires. We got a lot of ego in this world. And so basically what it boils down to is we've got to find out really what is necessary and what's important because we've fallen away from that. And that's the best way I can answer that. If you come to one of my private settings, I'll go in much depth for you. Okay? Yes, ma'am?
I just wondered how those chemicals showed up in your lungs.
Well, from what the pathologist said, each lung in our chest is held individually. It's not one big capsule. So on this side, it's just one big air pocket, and on this side. And so when it came in, it seeped out of the alveoli, out of my lung, into the wall jacket. And that's how it was found. So it was actually on the outside of the girth, which is what is called, the lung is called, it's called a girth. And so they took a form of material and they ran it through biopsy. And that's how they found the perchloroethylene and the carbon tetrachloride. Carbon tetrachloride was pulled off the market 10 years after I died. 29 people in California died. And Lee Halliday, the lady that wrote the check for me to have the lung transplant, that's her real name, got into a head-on collision, and now she doesn't remember me, and it was on I-80, but she took it to the Senate, and she got it passed throughout the United States. It's no longer being able to be used by anyone. It's that bad. Okay, now perchloroethylene is still used so many parts per billion but they cut down on it. But all these marks that you see on the back of my hands is from perchloroethylene, and it brings skin cancer to the surface. I worked in a dry cleaners for 14 months. I worked with in trucking, in the trucking industry. I had actually worked in it for a few years, never had a problem, but I had an oxygenated respirator. In the dry cleaning, I didn't have squat. Yes, sir.
Based upon your experience, does Heavenly Father allow all of this tribulation going on in the world? Because without the tribulation, we tend to forget Him?
You got it. Yes, sir. I asked Jesus straight up, why in the world does God allow all this chaos? He says, man has always brought chaos upon himself, but through chaos you find true life. Through chaos you find what works right. So human beings have an awkwardness about ourselves. It's like we're not happy unless all hell's breaking loose. Have you noticed in our history, we got to have a war every 20 years, and if we don't, then we're having one underneath the table. Well, I'm going to throw bubble gum at the Russian or the Chinese or whatever, but I'm your friend, dude. Hockey puck. So basically, yes, God does not step forward, in my opinion. God does not step forward. We're supposed to take care of ourselves. We know what's right and wrong. It's just whether or not we're going to follow through with it. Yes, sir.
Karen, I was just wondering, I've always wondered if someone from another culture, if they saw Buddha or if they saw Allah, or because you mentioned that like Jesus is on the seventh plane.
Yes.
With all those others. So in your experience, can you tell me something about that?
I can only tell you that I know that there are others there. Yogananda Gira is there because I saw him. But did I talk to him? No, I didn't. I did see Sister Mother Teresa, and she didn't have half the wrinkles that she did when she left. Okay. But she sure had a lot of smiley faces. And I did see John. Okay, Pope John. I loved that man. He was very, very kind and very sincere. So all of them, and what it is, from what I understand, Jesus had mentioned that all the people that the chosen masters were for were there that have expired through the years. Bala, Maya, Yawana, which is God, is there, Hebrew. And so that's the only way I know how to say it to you.
I just have to tell you, I did my research on history of near-death experiences. One of the things we found is people of all different cultures, what they believe, what they've embraced in this world is what they understand. And so who they see is Allah or whomever it might be, because that is what they take, is the knowledge that they, am I correct?
Yes.
The knowledge you have here is what you take. But the great thing is, from what I understand, is you will have an eon to learn even more. But anything of goodness is going to be what you will take with you. And that's what you will see and know in your own language, which is beautiful.
Yes.
Karen? I like rednecks. It's been a while since I've seen a redneck. Yeah, thank you. Tell me, are you consider yourself clairvoyant now? And how did that change happen? And how is the difference between the way you were?
Oh, honey, I got to tell you, I am nothing like I used to be at all. I was one of the boys, okay? I used to be 5'2.5". I am now 5 foot. And when I take my shoes off, I shrink. I love big shoes. I did take karate for quite a while because I was hurt very badly as a young woman and a young child. And so as I grew and brought a boy and a girl into the world, I was going to protect myself. And in that protection, I was very angry. And I was the Jackie of all trades and the mistress of none. I have been a clairvoyant for 20 years, the longest job I've ever had, and I'll die doing this work, because if it helps you, then I've helped myself. Sometimes I think back on the redneck that was, and I'm thinking, my God, look at that. Fingernails. Wow. Frillies. Poofy hair. Makeup. I'm a very plain Jane, and always have been. God really buffed up my brass, and he told me how beautiful a person I was. And it changed everything about me. Jesus said, here you are as one with one, to be as one in all ways. Remember that in all ways. I've never forgotten it. When I look at you, I truly do love you, because he showed me the value of that love. That's all I've ever wanted in this life, was someone to really love me, just to love me for me. And I've got that now. And so, yeah, got a redneck on one side, and I don't know what on the other. I keep telling people I'm working for my wings. I'm hoping, I'm crossing my fingers, you know. Yes, ma'am.
Did you experience or sense that there was a different degree of glory for people, or was everyone together?
Yes, there is. On the fourth and fifth planes of consciousness, I visited there fairly regularly. However, I've went to the 10th and the 11th. Hot diggity dang. There's energy there that is so profound. It's a very high frequency. And when we're in that consciousness, the light of God is around everything. You are pristine in every fact, in every manner. The great halls is where the Akashic records are. The old ones have put in lifetimes of lives there that we've lived and that we continue to live. Our souls is very repetitious. Our lives aren't, but our souls are. They're eternal. And what was hard for me was I didn't believe in reincarnation. I have found 6 of my burial places in the last 20 years. So that's the only way I know how to describe it. I did not graduate from high school, and yet I can tell you that little Flower lies in state in a glass casket with her hands clasped, holding a wooden crucifix, and her body did not decompose. And I died in 1788. I don't know how I know it, but I know it. It's the only way I know how to explain it. Yes.
Why in the world then would you want to go to the other side if you know you're just going to be spit back right out again? I mean, what would be the, if you've learned all this, what would be the purpose of that?
The learning never stops.
Right, but do you have to come back here? I mean,
well, no, we can go
to some other place.
We can go many places.
Oh, good.
We can go to Ametria, Pleiades, Demetria, Solnte. There's many different levels of concentration that we can go to.
That makes me feel better.
Yes.
Okay.
I met a gentleman in Colorado, and his name is Hoska Harrison. Hoska Harrison is a walk-in. And he brought with him 72 entities from the other side named Jonah. And Jonah does not come from this realm. And he speaks of many different things, God included, in many different areas. And he's a very, very smart individual and entity. Okay, and that's the best way that I know how to share it with you.
Do you have any more questions?
Can you explain a little bit more about the void? That kind of frightened me.
Yeah, it should. A few years ago, there was a gentleman that came to speak here at Ions, and his name is Howard Storm. Howard Storm got caught in the void. The void is a place of hell. There is no color. It's gray. It's dismal. And the gray ones do not desire to be around God. In fact, it hurts their ears to hear God's name said and mentioned. There's a real strong sensation of anger, resentment, pain that lives there. A lot of our suicides that have been will go and visit that area until Jesus or one of the others will go and pick them up, because it takes faith to pull them out of that, what I'll call hell. I know that in the short period of time that I was there, I was very frightened. I can tell you that in this area, these are the chosen ones that decide to stay away from God. They choose to live in this darkness because they're earthbound. They are in areas 1 and 2, okay? And these are lower than what we are. We're considered the third level of consciousness that we're living on right now in the physical realm. When you're really sick, you will see gray entities like shadows around you. And those are souls that are on the other side. Not necessarily are they from the first and second plane, okay? But they are gray. The minute that color starts coming into it, well, they're certainly not from 1 or 2. And 9 times out of 10, when you see them in light, you're already gone from the physical plane. We will see them with the retina just before we cross over. Then our eyes get real big because the light opens up our consciousness. I asked the guardian many, many years ago, why does the eyeball get so big? And he says, because you're looking on God's light. And I said, well, that makes a whole lot of sense. Yes, ma'am?
You said that it takes faith to get out of there. Is it our faith or theirs? Have any influence?
It's your faith. When I was walking through the void, I kept saying Psalms 23. Yea, though I walk through the valley of death, I fear not, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou anointest my head in oil. And boy, let me tell you, they was moving like that away from me. They didn't want any part of me. And boy, I mean, I just kept reciting it because I knew somewhere or another I was going to get out of there, because I was just walking through it. I wasn't going to stay around there. Okay. I had never heard anyone talk about the void except for Howard Storm. And that was a few years ago in this very room. He was at this very podium when he was speaking. And it just hit me like a rock. The second thing, that something that we had in common, he sat on the Emerald Rock with the Guardian, talking and learning. The same Emerald Rock that I saw my life review in. Thank you, you guys. It's been a pleasure to stand in front of you. And by all means, please remember your faith. Let your faith be stronger than your fear. Know that God feels you, knows you, loves you. And it's not so many of these that get you there or that on the pew. It's what you got right here that gets to him. Thank you so much. I love you all.